just looking at the Dolphins here. I mean, it looks like, you know, we played them before. It was at the end of a little bit of a bad stretch for them, but they certainly played well lately. Or the last six, a real competitive even in the games they dropped. So, you know, just solid all the way around. Good job in all three phases of the game. Still real fast and physical on defense. Big plays in the kick game. They've been dangerous back there, and get a little bit of a groove there offensively too. Good balance. You know, running game and passing game. Always run the ball well. Such big group for athletic quarterback, so. But they're playing well. Doing a good job. Joe's doing a good job. Like, they improved. Sure that Philbin's working hard, and you can see them doing things better every week. It's a good win for them. So, be a big challenge for us this week down there. Always is.
Hey, Bill, just keeping it on Miami here. We always talk around here about the development of players from a first year to their second year. Miami has Cameron Wake. We know what he is. They traded up to get Deion Jordan, third pick. And yet it's Olivier Vernon who's got 11.5 sacks. You know, what are you seeing from him that's different maybe from his rookie season to this year that has allowed him to escalate his play to a really high level?
Well, you know, I think obviously he's just gotten a little bit better with experience. You know, they play him some inside and outside. You know, he's a versatile player that's got, you know, a really good set of skills. If he had a college, got good quickness, is strong, runs well. He makes plays and pursuit, chase the quarterback out of the pocket. I think that he's a good technician. He's developed definitely better technique in his pass rush than what he had as a rookie. But they have a real good front.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about sort of the evolution of Shane as a pass catcher. Looking at his numbers when he was at Cal, maybe a couple of catches a game. So when he was being looked at by you guys, was that something that jumped out at you, or you sort of projected as something that he could do? And now, paying it forward, what makes him so good at being used that way in your offense?
Well, I thought he had good receiving skills at Cal, and you know, and Coach Tedford's offense there, he could use them best. Probably good receiver too. We were all last week, but 17 or 19 or whatever it was. I'd say quite a bit out of the normal for any back. But, you know, Shane does a good job. He's got good quickness. He's got good instinctive receiver skills. Kind of know when to make decisions relative to the leverage that he's played with. You know, the coverage, man zone, linebacker leverage, so forth. Dependable in blitz pickup, which is important because no matter what kind of receiver our back is, it's hard to get. You know, and obviously Shane does a good job with holes.
Good morning, Coach. There's been a lot of talk the last few days about what hits by defenders should be legal and not legal. They've already kind of taken the hits to the head into the upper body, more or less out of the game. Just in your experience with the speed of the game and the way things are bang-bang sometimes, is it feasible to ask defenders, especially in the secondary, also not to target at the knee or lower in addition to at the head?
You know, probably not really a question for me. It's something you should probably refer to the league and the rules committee and all that. I guess you can make it. I guess you can make it anything you want because that's what it is right now. It's whatever it's been made to be. That's what it is. So I'm sure you could make it into whatever you want beyond that.
Have you ever heard of the proposal by some people maybe to take helmets out of the game and that would make the game a little safer? Have you ever heard or discussed that?
I don't think I've been part of that discussion. Yeah, we made an awful lot of changes to the game here in the last week. Does it make it better? We've had a pretty good game.
Good afternoon, Bill. I'm curious what your impressions have been of Silver Saliga and what you thought of his work Sunday against the Browns in his most extended action.
You know, I think he's a hardworking kid. He's improved a lot. He's been here, and I think some of the things we've asked him to do are a little bit different than what he's been doing, but, you know, adapted pretty quickly. And spent a lot of extra time here working on the technique, positioning in the weight room. So, you know, I thought he hung in there and played real competitively last week against Cleveland. Obviously, you know, young guy, long way to go. But he did some positive, definitely did a lot of positive things.
Just a follow-up on him, and it might be a stretch. I mean, how much does the presence of, like, a former Broncos staffer in your pro personnel department play any factor, if at all, in you guys, you know, initially signing him to the practice squad?
I think our pro personnel department, the entire group, you know, does a good job of staying on top of players in the league throughout the year, whether it's spring, free agency period, or whether it's a training camp, 53-man cut period, or now the season. The rosters, you know, have been all set, but there's still some personnel that entire staff should do a good job of staying up on the personnel, sure everybody in that department contributes.
Bill, I know you probably don't look at it this way, but I'm just thinking of a two-week snapshot of what we've seen from Steven Gostkowski, you know, to kick the two 53-yarders in Houston, and then to get a 50-yarder, and then the onside kick. Just talking about fourth-quarter performance, how impressive to you is that sort of two-week snapshot from what he's accomplished, and can you think of a time when he has performed more in the clutch for you guys when you really needed him in his 8 years with the team?
He's had a couple of pretty clutch weeks. I think it'd be hard to, you know, be much more clutch than that. But I think hit on the head. You know, so much of the kickers, but whatever he does is just based on opportunity. Just, you don't know. Got to be ready, but you don't know when you come to the stadium whether you're going to be kicking field goals, kicking extra points, not kicking at all, onside kicking, so forth. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of a, you know, some of that's by opportunity. You know, you get into game winning situations or onside kick situations. When's the last time we've onside kick? It's infrequent, but when it comes up, it means everything, and it's really all more impressive. I think part of it for Steve is just, you know, not only did not, but it was very infrequent play, and it was at the most critical time. And without it, we wouldn't have won. So you know, all those things are impressive.
A little bit different question here. Just thinking about timeouts and maybe specifically focusing on the second half. You know, it seems like quarterbacks almost have it in their head if they see that play clock running down 3-2-1, that oftentimes it's timeout before taking the delay of the game. But I'm wondering, you know, thinking about a tight game on Sunday for you guys where timeouts prove so valuable, you know, is there either a call you guys have, or is that a conversation that's flowing throughout the game, that, or at least in the second half when timeouts come at a certain premium, that, hey, it's worth taking the 5-yard penalty over, you know, using one of these timeouts in case we need them, you know, in our back pocket later? I just wondering what sort of the thought process is in terms of approaching that specific situation of the clock winding down and a quarterback risking or weighing, you know, taking the timeout to prevent the penalty versus letting the penalty incur and moving back 5 yards.
You know, that's a great question. Certainly one that, you know, I'm sure everybody gives a lot of thought to. Start with the easy situation. Easier is, you know, it's much more clear cut in the kicking game when, you know, you can sometimes easier it's easier to afford the delay game penalty since you're giving the ball anyway, especially if you have good field position. And 5 yards, you know, can be made up by the kicker, you know, on the kick. So, you know, with the ball around midfield and that kind of thing, it's a lot easier to take that penalty, and that's something that you go over with your specialists and your punter, your, you know, your holder on field goals and all that about when you do, when you don't want to do it. And that's, I think, a lot easier to define. With a quarterback, you know, it's a great point that you bring up. And again, we've had games this year where we've needed timeouts at the end of the game, and thankfully we've had them because they weren't used, you know, for other reasons. Like, as an example, last year in Seattle, when we didn't have timeouts at the end of the game because, you know, they'd used it at another point in the game. So, you know, in the end, it comes down to, let's say, a set of guidelines that you have as a team, and ultimately, of course, it's judgment by the quarterback. And I think an experienced quarterback, you know, a guy that's really, you know, been in the system and really, you know, knows not only what, you know, what he's doing, but knows what he's doing within the system and, you know, knows the offense thoroughly. When the play comes in late or the substitution comes in late or there's some kind of down and distance confusion about what, you know, what you're calling or what you're not calling, again, I think an experienced quarterback can sometimes just make a call, you know, and get the team out of the huddle and get into the line of scrimmage and run a play. Maybe it's not the exact play that the coordinator would have called or was sent in, but, you know, it's a quick play that we can line up in, that we know how to run, that we've run before. And again, that's a lot easier to do on a first down or second down than it is on third down. And I think, you know, it's one thing to, you know, to use a timeout on a, you know, third down when you're talking about maintaining possession of the ball and, you know, all those type of things, compared to on early downs when you still have at least one more down, if not two. And I don't want to say the play is not important, but it's certainly not as important. So, you know, it's a great question. And yeah, one that we've spent many hours discussing as a staff, and that you can flip right over to defense too. It's no different on defense of, you know, having a, you know, some type of a miscommunication or 12 men on the field, or the offense is in a different personnel group than what you thought they were in because you've missed the substitution, or they've done it a little bit differently, or whatever it happens to be. And then, you know, do you want to be in that matchup? Is that more of a risk than using a timeout that you would want to save for later in the game? Yeah. So there's a lot of elements to, you know, to the question, and therefore the answer. Judgment by players on the field, defensive signal caller, quarterback, specialist, holder, punter, you know, personal protector, you know, those all play into it too. I don't know that there's any true textbook for right or wrong decision, but I think the bottom line is judgment and making the best decision, and a lot of times that's just done by a good instinctive football player on the field. Because everything, you know, isn't quite by the book. You know, depending on how much the team is confused, or how important the situation is, or how easy it is to get into something that we are comfortable in, you know, that's all part of it too. But it's certainly at different points in the game, it's certainly a key decision making play that often goes unnoticed, you know, good or bad, one way or the other.
Thanks, Stacey. Bill, you mentioned how infrequent using an onside kick can be. after the game, Steven said that there are multiple different versions that you guys can choose from. And I'm curious if you sort of leave the sideline huddle knowing which one you've chosen, or do you wait and see how the opponent is set up before giving some kind of signal on which one you're going to use?
Again, as we talked about yesterday after the game, whatever it was, I'm just going to kind of bypass that question because it really gets into the strategy of the play, and I do think that's important. And what we can do, what we're going to do, what our options are, how we set it up, I think, is something that, I really just I can't get into. But I think when you look around the league over the last few years, you've seen a number of different versions of onside kicks. I've seen, I'd say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, pretty much everybody did the same thing. You line up ready up over on one side and kick the ball to that side with the type of kick that the kicker kicks. Since the rules have changed, you can't overload the formation anymore, and so forth. Now that's changed the onside kick strategy, where I think you see a number of different types of kicks, even by the same team. So, that's, I think that's changed it for everybody a little bit. And it's just not as easy to get, those overloaded formations. You just can't do it anymore. It's not easy. It's illegal. You can't do it. So, you have to take a look at what what the situation is now. And I think if you look at the numbers, which I don't have right in front of me, but I'd venture to guess that the overall success rate on onside kicks, first of all, you don't see very many surprise onside kicks anymore, but that's because of the rules. But on the must onside kicks, I think the numbers on those are down, from earlier years' numbers, talking about the last two or three years relative to probably before that, because of the rules changes and what you're allowed to do. It's just it's a lot tougher to do it. So,
you meant the success rate was down, yes?
Pardon me?
You meant the success rate is down when you said the numbers were down. You meant the success rate, yes?
Yes, the success rate. Yeah. You're going to do it when you got to do it. But as far as although I'd say that the lack of success on those kicks is that influences your decision on trying to. Trying to onside kick when there's still time to go in the game. Hmm. Like if there's 2.5 minutes to go and you got a couple timeouts, do you want onside kick and attempt to get the ball back when the percentages are very low versus trying to kick off, play defense, and know you might not see the ball again either and have no chance to get it. So, I think that I would just guess that. Off the top of my head, that going back a few years, that there was more of a tendency, what happened in the Philadelphia Super Bowl with Andy, where you want to attempt that onside kick, with time where you could kick the ball off deep, but now I think that you probably see even less of that. That the onside kicks occur when it's more of a true desperation situation. You have no choice.
Bill, this is in relation to Fields' question, and I think you touched on it somewhat, but with regards to the quarterback stepping to the line of scrimmage, seeing the defense and being confused by it and calling a timeout, we see that frequently from other teams. I think it occurred, at least it appeared that way, on Sunday for the Browns. In Tom's case, given his experience and his knowledge, his recognition, does that come up? I mean, it seems like it never seems to occur. And how important is that to your ability to conserve those timeouts? Just what you recognize from the defense, let alone what's been called from your side.
Well, let me just make a couple comments on your question, and then I'll maybe you could rephrase the question. I'm not sure if I'm getting it right or not here, but first of all, nobody really understands this, but. I can't think of a game, certainly not not any recently, where there isn't some type of communication issue with either the headsets or the coach to quarterback system, where you either have to replace it, change the helmet, which we've had to do several times this year, or the system just goes in and out because of, and I'm not smart enough to understand why, but, you know, the frequency gets jammed, or there's interference, or whatever it is. And, you know, one of the key people for us on the sideline is Dan Famosi, who, you know, works with that system for us to try to get it operating, you know, smoothly and troubleshoot problems when they come up. And so he's really a very important key guy for us, you know, in the game as well as, you know, during the week and all the other things he does around here. But anyway, so it's not uncommon at all for the quarterback not to get the play that's called in, or the defensive signal for that matter, to not get the play that was called in because there was interference, or you know, he only heard part of the call and didn't hear the whole thing, or, you know, whatever it is. And so then that starts the process all over again. And then, of course, you get the whole deal where the communication gets cut off with 15 seconds. So, you know, if for some reason, you know, you're coming down to the wire there and you might have time to get the play called, but now the quarterback can't hear it, or the signal caller can't hear it because the 15-second mark has hit. So that complicates it. And then, you know, does the quarterback just call another play there, or does he make the best he can out of it, or, you know, but then there's another decision-making process there. You know, in addition to that, as we all see, there are so many different, you know, personnel groups on the field and substitutions, and, you know, when you have an injury in the game, like, for example, we had Sunday, and you lose a guy who's, you know, who's in those personnel groups, and then, you know, somebody has to replace him, and then does that, you know, change where everybody lines up the next time you run plays, you know, because you can't have a backup for everybody. Somebody has to back up multiple positions and so forth. So there's some complications that get involved there. So I just say the combination of all those things, the system not functioning at 100%, the just the, you know, game management, the obviously variable of what's on the other side of the ball. You know, what do they have in the game? Have they made a late substitution, or do they have in what you think they're going to have in? You know, getting those plays, you know, getting the plays and the defenses called, getting them done properly, getting them done without, you know, some kind of glitch, I'd say it's almost impossible that you're not going to have a few of those during every game. And again, what it comes back to is the judgment of the quarterback, signal caller, or, you know, whoever's involved there of, well, is this screwed up that we can't get it right? Can I fix it? Do we have time to fix it? How critical is the situation? Is it worth taking a timeout? Or, you know, can we just go out there and just run one of our basic plays and, you know, get through it? But I guarantee you every team in the league deals with it on both sides of the ball, and it's a serious part of the game that, you know, needs great judgment and management from the people on the field, of the coach and the signal caller, the quarterback. And, you know, fortunately we have, you know, a great one in Tom, who's, you know, dealt with everything you can deal with and more, but and he's been in our system a long time, and I think he has a pretty good idea of when we would and wouldn't want to, you know, use timeouts or change plays and that kind of thing. But it's definitely a significant issue that is part of every game. So going back to Cleveland, I mean, I have no idea what did or didn't happen there, but I know it happened to us. It happened in the game to us, and so. But I'd say it happens in every game. I mean, you know, we've changed helmets, we've changed You know, we switched headsets for the coaches. We've gone to multiple different systems to try to either change the issue or fix the problem if we can just fix it right there on the field. But it's certainly something that you got to think quickly on. You got to have people that can react to it, and you need somebody that technologically can solve the problem as well, that knows what they're doing and knows how to fix it.